Thank you. I want to talk a little bit as we begin this about the environment that OECD is now seeing and is talking about with all of the nations that belong to it. Some of you know Andreas Schleicher, who is the PISA guru at OECD. He has done an enormous amount of research based on the questionnaires completed by students, teachers, and principals, and has come up with a better understanding of what is happening. And one of the points that he makes, and this is the point with which he ends his presentations usually, is that what we've got to do if we are going to educate young people to be effective members of the much more competitive 21st century environment is to ensure that we've got schools that are interested in and encouraging their teachers to use what he calls informed professional judgment. And you see from this chart the various ways that we've done it in the past, but what we need if we're talking about a knowledge-rich system for the future. So if we want teachers who have the knowledge and skills as well as access to the support systems necessary for them to continue to be effective, then we are going to have to change the way in which we do business. And part of that is the compensation. As we talk about compensation, we use two different measures of how to look at compensation across nations. The first is purchasing power parity, PPP, as it's referred to in the report, which says what is it that teachers can buy with their salaries in their own countries. And on that measure, the United States is the highest of the G8 nations. Another way of looking at it, however, is to say, what is the per capita gross domestic product that teachers earn? And this enables us to compare teacher pay to that of other professionals in their society. And as you know, this is how many young people make their decisions about whether or not to choose teaching. So in some countries, in fact, the salaries are comparable to the salaries offered to civil engineers and others. In other countries, they're well below that. So we want to look at that. And on this measure, the United States is the lowest of the G8 nations. As we looked at the report, we tried to come up with some categories of things, and one of them was, to whom are nations targeting their salary increases? And it's different by country. Some say our biggest challenge is recruiting new teachers who are able to provide the knowledge and skills that our young people need, who are complex thinkers and therefore able to develop those skills in their students. And that is what Australia, Denmark, England, Finland, and Norway focused on. On the other hand, other countries have focused on retention of current teachers. And they therefore have looked at the mid-career salaries and have increased those. And other nations are saying, no, what we've got to do is make sure that we have a way to keep our best teachers, our most experienced teachers, in the classroom rather than having them leave the classroom to go into administration in order to get increased salaries. And as you see, Greece, Hungary, and New Zealand are doing that. When we talk about the working conditions, again, the variance is great across the countries. And we have to be careful about the comparisons that we do, because while in French secondary schools, teachers work 15 hours a week, and that sounds like a great deal, what we have to remember is that's the number of hours they're actually teaching. In other countries, they don't do it that way. They say these are the hours the teacher is at school, and the teacher is available not only to do the teaching, but to do the planning, the conferencing, the meeting with parents. And Iceland says 45.8 hours per week. But even there, it's hard to know exactly what that is. Japan is a nation that has very few actual teaching hours, yet their teachers are at school 10 hours a day. What are they doing the rest of the time that they're not teaching? They're working, as many of you know, on lesson studies with other teachers. They're working individually with students. They're developing their own knowledge and skills through professional development. Again, when we look at hours per year, we go from 600 hours per year in Korea, and again, these are hours spent teaching, versus 1,000 hours or more in the United States. Class size is another issue that you have to look at in compensation. Again, it's very small to very large. Korea, for example, you see only has 600 hours a year that teachers are required to teach. They have large class sizes to keep the cost down. Korea is one of the lowest cost nations in terms of per pupil expenditure. And they do this by having larger classes, but teachers teaching fewer classes each day so that they have more time for their other activities. And in fact, the research shows that class size really makes a difference only for specific groups of students. For at-risk students, for early childhood education, are the places where small class size really makes a difference. For the rest, we can find no differences from the research. I have to also say that most of the research that's been done on teacher quality and teacher compensation is research done in the United States. And it's one of the challenges that we have. Salary incentives for challenging schools or shortage areas, again, we have a range of options for monetary incentives, somewhere around $2,000 a year per teacher if we were converting that to American dollars. It gets them there, but it doesn't keep them there. On the other hand, Denmark offers free accommodations. If you go to the remote areas, they provide all of the housing. Korea and China, on the other hand, say if you work in these schools, you have a chance to move farther up the ladder. In China, a distinguished teacher must have spent at least 2 years in a remote rural area teaching in order to get that promotion. Shortage areas, too. Some, like England, do loan forgiveness as a way of getting people to select education and stay with it. They do it for 10 years, but it's the entire debt. Some of us went through the NDEA scholarships, 5 years, 20% per year, up to a certain limit. There's not the same kind of limit there. Others give direct aid during school, as England does, to include people and to keep them working on their education, whereas others use sign-on bonuses or annual stipends to keep them teaching in those areas. Yet this is still a major project and a major problem. PISA 2000 had principals saying in over half the countries that these shortages compromise student learning, and they compromise them for the majority of their students. So again, they're having the same challenges we are in getting teachers into secondary schools, particularly those schools serving disadvantaged students. Performance-related salary systems was really the big issue that we tried to look at, and we used Auden's topology, which was there are three kinds: knowledge and skills-based pay, additional pay focused on what teachers know and are able to do, merit pay, which is based on teacher performance and often measured by student performance, or team and group-based pay. Now, while Auden agrees that the regular salary schedule will not get us to this new level of productivity that's required to educate young people for the 21st century, he also believes that merit pay has been ineffective in this country and has, even where it's been started, 10 years later is gone because it causes so many challenges and issues. Right now, as Mark mentioned, Sweden is probably the most different system in that it individualizes teacher salaries. There's a set opening salary, but from that point forward, it's negotiated between the teacher and the principal at the school, or by choice of the teacher, by the union and the principal of the school. And it's based on the level. In most European countries, there's still a major difference between the way elementary, lower secondary and upper secondary teachers are compensated, with the upper secondary getting the larger salaries. So the level is important. The labor market, is it a tight market or a loose one at the time? Have they shown that they've improved their own performance? And what other responsibilities do they take on? Australia, England, and New Zealand have identified what they call advanced skills teachers. This is a career ladder that teachers move to based on evaluations, based on examinations and observations of their teaching. So they put together a portfolio of these things and apply to be advanced skills teachers. And then there's a major increase in salary. In order to stay, they've got to maintain that performance, otherwise they go back to the original salary. Some provide school-based bonuses for performance, but there is no nation that has national criteria for such bonuses. So it's left up to the school, discretionary funds given to the principal for this purpose. And as Mark mentioned, Chile says we're going to look at the top quarter of our schools in each one of our SES bands, and every teacher at that school receives additional stipends, and that's the team or group-based pay. When we look at principal salaries, again, we see that there are differences from what we do. Their principals are not as well prepared as ours are. They have not had to go through the kind of training programs ours do, though that is changing now that they're asking them to take on much more complex roles. Now they're really the head cheerleader, the constituency manager in terms of not only the staff within the school, but the community outside the school. They're accountable for student performance. They're recruiting students against others trying to recruit their students away from their school. And this is all in addition to the traditional responsibilities that they've always had to manage the school and its responsibilities. So now we see many more countries putting in training programs. We see performance-based contracting in Australia and in England, where principals can earn a performance bonus. Just as in this country, though, while they make more money, we see the same concerns, the same early retirement, the same concerns expressed in surveys by principals. The compensation is not enough considering all that they do and the fact that they regularly have a 60-hour week at school plus other activities that they're engaged in. Denmark, Germany, and Japan still see the role as head teacher, just the person who kind of organizes and mediates the environment for the teachers, none of these other responsibilities. And the pay is accordingly very similar to teacher pay, just a bit of a stipend over and above that to make it work. And now, again, Germany has discovered that their schools are not doing as well. PISA was a major shock to them as they looked at their school systems, and now they're saying we've got to change our schools. And part of that is we're going to have to train our principals to be the school leaders, to be the ones who are raising productivity. And the influence of unions, again, in most of the European countries, the teacher population is highly unionized. It ranges from 40% in some countries, but in the Scandinavian countries, it's 100% in Norway, 85% in Denmark. So you've got very large percentages of the students who are, of the teachers who are unionized. And the union not only works with the national government on the traditional issues we think of, wages, hours, working conditions, but also on policies governing their profession, things like ethics, school improvement, curriculum instruction, evaluation, and assessment. However, there are countries such as France, Germany, Japan, and Korea that say there will be no collective bargaining. The government will decide how things are done. England and Wales went to an independent group. The government gives its proposals to the independent group for response, or things bubble up through the teacher system to them, and they make recommendations to the board. And while it is an advisory board, they usually are taken very seriously, and what they suggest is often what happens. So what do we have? The same challenges we do. Challenging schools are hard to staff across the world. There are schools that are unable to get qualified teachers, and that affects student learning. And when we looked at the number of countries in OECD that are looking at salaries versus class size, while many of them are doing some of each, more of them are putting more of their money into salaries than into cutting class sizes. Again, the incentives are effective when they're carefully structured. What we saw in the research is that when it's used to clarify what is expected, to support teachers in focusing on those, and teachers then spending their time looking at what needs to be done, we see big differences. But it's got to be larger amounts of money if it's going to be effective. Again, go back to the data collection. Until countries start collecting data in ways that they can use to assess the efficacy of the policies and programs they put into place, we're really only looking at research in the United States, and that has not been as widespread. Sweden is looking at some research on its new policies, but again, it doesn't have the kind of data systems in place that will enable them to do a before and after, that will enable us to identify best practices. And finally, the roles of both teachers and principals are becoming far more complex as the world has become more complex and the expectations higher for what it is that they're going to do.